someone just starting maybe their first day of co-op?
Well, I think it's really important to walk in with an idea of what your goals for the day are, sort of where you want to be at the end of the day, just in your understanding of the workplace that you're in and who you're working with and who the players are. And also getting an idea of what your long-term goals are for the period you're going to be there. So if it's a co-op, really thinking about how you want to feel when you're walking out at the end of the period.
Yeah, and that's good to reflect also on your learning goals. And that's a good reason why you fill out those learning goals in your report of hire and kind of use those as a guide as you go through the co-op term.
So would you recommend, I know learning goals are a very co-op centric thing, but if somebody, thinking about our seniors who either A, just graduated in April or about to graduate in August, like, do you recommend that they maybe set some goals for what they're hoping to learn in their first week or month on the job?
I think there's both the action of sort of internally setting goals like that so that you have an idea of what you want to be doing with the career path you've chosen. That can be written down. It can be something that you're evaluating in a very structured way, or it can really be a structure that is internal that you're going to sort of spend the next week to 2 weeks getting a sense of the place that you're employed at and then determine goals based on what the organization itself is. Because really establishing a lot of goals before you understand the environment you're working at can be counterproductive, because you may have a set of goals in your head that you will quickly realize you won't be meeting in this new place of employment. So coming back and sort of readjusting it once you have more knowledge, I think it's a more useful way to do it.
Yeah, and sometimes you actually sit down with your supervisor and make goals together, depending on your review process at the job. And how that kind of plays out, it could be that you know, once you have kind of established your routine over, you know, a month or so, you sit down together and kind of plan out your goals for the year. So one thing that I would recommend students do, either on co-op or the first day of a full-time job, in the first week or first few days, is to check in with your supervisor about the best way to communicate with them. Whether you'll be, you know, have weekly meetings and they want you to kind of write down your questions in between and present them all then, or if you do have a quick question, if they'd rather you email, or if you have some kind of texting or messaging feature that they want you to use, or just pop by their desk. It's good to know, because, you know, some people get interrupted and they can't refocus. So to avoid that, it's good to kind of get a check on how that works. Another thing to think about is if you do have to be out for, you know, if you're sick or if you're running late, how bosses like to know how you're going to get in touch with them for those types of situations.
And you can't always rely on the employer having that information at hand. It's not necessarily distributed at every office as to what the norms are. A lot of it is really picking up the information as you go and watching what the actual landscape of the office is. One thing that I usually recommend to all employees, but especially young employees that are coming into an office, is really seeing how the culture embraces technology and how the culture embraces use of personal technology. Mm. Because it is very easy to mistake folks that are using their cell phones or are on the computer as actually doing personal instead of professional work. And you want to make sure that you're not being judged as someone that is using their phone or using their computer for personal based on your possible misunderstanding of how the rest of the office is functioning. You sort of have to come in with a really high set of standards that you want to meet for yourself to make sure that you don't end up in a position where you're perceived as not doing work but busy on your phone.
Yeah, so if you are a person who tend to take notes on their phone or take notes on their computer during meetings, it's better to bring a pen and pencil and a piece of paper just so that it's not misconstrued.
And I think if if it is a culture that you can bring technology, just speaking up when you say, like, I'm going to be taking notes, or this is where it's easiest for me to take notes. So I think, like, in that way, you're not really asking for accommodations, but you're sort of, like, sharing what is your preferred method of learning. So I think there's some room there as long as the culture allows it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. And it's important to do take notes. So if you can bring kind of a notepad and pen around with you to take notes during meetings, or if you speak with your supervisor, or when you get assigned a new project, and ask questions so that you have an understanding of things that may be unfamiliar. Some places of employment use a lot of acronyms, and so it's important to ask, you know, if you're unfamiliar with those, what they are, and write that stuff down. And then, you know, once you do have, like, worked through a project or completed something, to ask for more work and don't just sit there idle, especially for a co-op, because it is kind of a semester-long interview for them to check you out to see if they'd want to ask you back for another co-op or even for a full-time position in the future.
I think one thing to consider, too, is a lot of students and a lot of people in general try to figure out what the best way to ask questions is. Mm-hmm. And I think considering coming to a question by alerting the person you're asking that you have done the research before you've asked. So you may say, I looked this up and I think I understand this to mean such and such. Is that correct? Is a lot better than what does blank mean? Mm-hmm. Because it shows that you're putting effort in. Sometimes people think that sort of shortcutting right to ask a quick question without letting people know what basis of understanding you have is sparing them time. But generally letting people know that you've done the work and now you're asking for clarification goes a long way in what is a good question versus the, you know, quote unquote, stupid question.
So we've talked a bit about technology norms, asking questions. What other types of things should a student or a recent graduate be looking out for on their first day at an employer? What types of other things have you all looked at?
Well, I mean, to get right back to the basic beginning of something is what the impression is that you want to be making. The reality of a first week at work, really putting effort into presenting yourself in the most professional way, this is a time to really understand the importance of it. So if you're heading off into an office, thinking about what you're wearing, the condition of what you're wearing, how intentional you're coming into a space to appear professional can mean a lot. And it may be that you come off as more over-prepared than the office culture, but giving it about a week to sort of see where you fit into that is a logical time. You don't want to sort of jump to conclusions about mode of dress or casualness in an office without first really showing them the respect of putting yourself together and out there. And then back to where Rhea was mentioning, that getting yourself ready so that you can be able to pick up any project when necessary. A big goal is making yourself indispensable. Mm-hmm. And all that really means is the fact that people around you value the work that you do, value the amount you're paying attention to what needs to be done. It goes a long way in job security, but also in being able to move up through the ranks in a company.
I think a big part about that being valuable piece is being resourceful, just like you were talking about, where you come to somebody with a, I think this means this based on what I've done. That concept carries out all across your work. It's really a good idea if you want to be viewed as indispensable, as somebody who will, you know, Google something first, or say you take a look through the company drive of folders and say, hey, I looked in these folders for this information. I wasn't able to come up with it. Am I looking in the right place? That sort of thing really does, that's the mark of somebody who I think is going to become valuable at a company.
Yeah, and that first week you can kind of do some of that, lay the groundwork for that in terms of, like, you know, where are policies that I should be looking at, or where do you typically keep things that, you know, I'll need, you know, for my job, or that type of thing.
Another thing about that too, just digitally thinking, if they're check and see if there's a regular naming convention. If you're doing a lot of proposals or that sort of thing, I'm thinking of our construction managers and our civil engineers and maybe even our architects who are working in the construction space, they're going to be, you're going to be making a lot of documents. And so you want to make sure you're naming those documents the right way that the company would expect so that you're falling into line with them. So there's all sorts of little tiny things. So kind of being aware of all the ways that everybody is following suit with certain things.
And another great way to actually actively ask to educate yourself on that is to ask for examples, physical examples. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a field where there are drawing standards, such as architecture, interior design, industrial design, construction management, asking for examples that the company has of what a package they would put together looks like so that you may study it. What you're doing is you're actively asking someone to retrieve something for you, and then you will do the hard work of understanding what things are. Marking that up and then coming back with any questions you have is very different than saying, can you show me how this is done? Mm-hmm. So, and the other thing is to let people know that you value references, in the sense of if you can have materials that you referenced and study and learn, instead of actively always going to another person and taking their billable time. It's just it's a way that people can look at it and say, yeah, this person is here to work, is here to understand, and is taking on the task of getting themselves up to speed, and not making that a burden. That's really an important beginning.
Well, I think this is a good time for a break. We can come back and talk a little bit about the differences between school and work and what we've got coming up on campus. So we'll be back in just a minute, everyone.
Thank you.
It was a good break.
Great, yeah. So we're going to talk a little bit about the differences between being in school and starting a job, how it can be kind of a culture shock. You know, you're going from having different classes, you know, changing every certain semester, you're picking the professors that you want, to this place where you've got to be every day. You know, it's 9 to 5. There aren't as many breaks in the workflow. And one thing that's really different is you don't get grades at work. What do you think about that?
That was really hard for me, to be honest. I'm your classic, like, type A student as far as that's concerned. And I was, like, very focused on, like, A's are good feedback. And so my whole life, it's always been like, well, how do I know I did it right? Oh, I got an A. And so in my first job, I really struggled with that in a big, bad way. Like, I did not know how to gauge how my boss felt about my work. And I've actually talked about that job here. It's a job I ended up losing, because I really couldn't understand. I couldn't operate. I couldn't go from student very successfully. And that wasn't the whole reason that I didn't stay at that job. But that was part of it.
Yeah. So I think it's important to, you know, touch base with your boss and get an idea of, you know, how things are going after the first month or so, and understand the way that your, you know, performance reviews work.
One thing that our supervisor does, or my direct supervisor does, the director of our department, is we used to be weekly one-on-ones. Now it's a bi-weekly one-on-one, but I found that has been the key to success for me, is having those weekly meetings with my boss, or those regular meetings with my boss, to kind of catch up. And I know it's like a safe space. So if I'm struggling, I can talk about that and not feel like I'm missing the mark on something. And so I think if your boss will allow it, and you have a culture at your work where you can do that and you need that sort of feedback, you should certainly ask for that kind of supervision meeting if they're not already built into your culture.
Well, and I think a thing to contemplate too is there are very different cultures that you'll be entering into. And there are offices that are small and intimate where one would expect the communication to be the strongest. And sometimes those offices, it's the reverse. Like, nothing is ever said, and then a yearly review comes up and you're discovering all these things from someone that you've been sitting 4 feet away from. And I do think, for our own good, getting a clear understanding of how our work is being perceived and how we can make improvements and so forth. If the company that you're joining, or the small firm, or the individual you're working with doesn't have that established, finding a way to request it and bring it forward in a non-threatening manner so that you can constantly be growing. Because I do think, I have worked places where there's no input, and then the input comes after 12 months. And it was like, a hint in this direction would have helped month number one.
Yeah.
And I could have been growing off of this, and I didn't realize that I could have been doing this differently or in a way that was better. So sort of figuring out how you might be able to nudge things. You don't really ever take control of it, and you don't necessarily want to be in control of it, but you may be able to push things in a direction where you're making sure you're growing and understanding where your strengths and weaknesses are.
Yeah, and it's important, if you do receive, you know, constructive criticism or some negative feedback, that, you know, you do kind of have to take that professionally, and it's definitely a hard lesson to learn. But typically, supervisors are giving you feedback to help you kind of learn and grow and move forward in the way that makes sense for the company. So, you know, taking that in a constructive way is important.
And sometimes also really recognizing that you may be trying to develop skills, but the person supervising you is also trying to develop skills. And quite often, you're going to be managed by someone that may not have been fully developed in the managerial department. So sometimes your constructive criticisms are being delivered in a way that is counterproductive. And finding a way to express that and help them grow without offending is also important, because there are times that the content isn't what's difficult to process, it's actually the delivery.
I think another really big thing that's different about the workplace rather than school is just the sheer range of ages that you're going to be around. There's actually a book coming out that I'm really excited to read. It's called The Remix. It's by this woman named Lindsay Polak, and she talks about how right now there are five generations in the workplace actively working, and how each generation views things differently and how we can work better together. But that's a huge shock, I think, for students when they're used to being around their peers who are within 4 years of their age, and then all of a sudden you're answering to somebody who could be a lot closer to your parents or maybe even your grandparents' age.
Yeah, it's definitely a different way of communicating that you might not be used to, and you kind of have to be aware of that. And because you want to be professional and start building a network of people that you, you know, if you do move to another role or move on to another company, that you can kind of call on for references or to connect you with other people. You know, and you'll have to, you know, instead of just saying, oh, I won't take class with that professor again, you may have to manage relationships with people who, you don't get along with the best. And you also sometimes have to manage your manager a little bit, like Jer was alluding to, that they may not know how to deliver criticism in the best way. And kind of figuring out your manager's strengths and weaknesses and how to play to that is important as well.
I think we can sometimes forget that all of us are in some sort of growth mode. As we move through our professional life, you don't really hit a place where the growing or the learning stops, or you shouldn't, but recognizing that more established people above you are still developing skills and still honing their craft.
At the same time, these folks are an incredible wealth of knowledge, and especially professional knowledge. So not just about the work that you're doing, but about being in the industry, or even they can be great resources. I found some of my best mentors have been, you know, more than a decade older than me. And it's because I, you know, a mentorship can be somewhat of a two-way street there. It's not just about you getting mentored too, because I was bringing like a young, youthful sort of different perspective from as a recent college graduate. And my mentor was bringing in this, well, this is how you need to approach people in the workplace. This is how you need to approach networking. You're going to be going to this industry event and you're going to be not the majority there. So how are you going to handle that sort of thing? So I think tapping into those folks that are not your age range is really helpful, because you can learn from them without having to do all the work.
The thing that's interesting too in talking about the age differences, I remember being in my late 20s and I was looking for a new job, and one of the comments that I was sort of repeating to myself and to other people as I was doing it is, I was looking for some gray hair. And what I meant by that was, I'd had a couple jobs where I was reporting to people that had quickly moved up in management that were contemporaries of mine. And what I found was they were more frightened of being wrong than successful at getting to the right answers.
Sure.
And so their managerial skills were lacking and their life experience was lacking, but they had moved to a place of power and they didn't really know how to handle it very well. And before that, I had worked for a generation that was two generations above myself, and I found them to be much more understanding of sort of human nature and open to ideas and perspective. And so I think there's a lot of value in that. And as I watch students at Wentworth, I see very often there is a wide range of age on the professors, and who people connect with very often defies the age difference.
Yeah, I think going along with finding a mentor, kind of like what Abby was saying, that they do have a wealth of knowledge about maybe technical things, but also about how things work within that organization, mm-hmm. depending on how long they've been there. So they can help you kind of navigate the norms or the hierarchy or the organizational flow of how things work at that company, which can be invaluable.
So next up, I can't just sleep through my alarm. I have to show up every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's different at work. You know, obviously you don't want to sleep through your classes either, but you're not just accountable to yourself anymore at work. You know, usually you're working on projects with a team and, you know, you have deadlines to meet and, you know, maybe clients to satisfy. And so you're more of a part of a whole than you may be as a student. You know, maybe once in a while you'll have a class and you'll work on a project with a team, but at work it's sometimes more of a bigger part of the environment.
And that attendance and timeliness factor too, things can get a little bit loose in some academic environments. And as Abby said, that looseness, not pre-approved, you know, and it also depends on the environment, but generally it is a very easy way to be judged as to your commitment and as to your ability to do the job. Because if you can't even get there, generally you're starting off down the wrong road.
Yeah, your colleagues are going to notice if you're showing up 5 to 10 minutes late regularly. It's going to go notice whether you think it. They might not say anything to you, but they're going to notice it. And that goes for showing up to meetings too. If you are always walking in at the stroke of one when your meeting starts at one, your colleagues are going to take that as a perhaps you're not as dedicated to the project or the effort or the team as you should be. You know, they're all waiting for the meeting to start at one and you're just rolling in at one, that sort of thing. So I think you have to really pay attention to how your role impacts your colleagues and your team and your organization.
Yeah, and know that, you know, if you do have issues with absences, there may not be warnings. You may not be, you know, given notice. It's possible just to be fired.
And I think, I mean, Rhea, from my standpoint, working with co-op students and reading all of the evaluations, the most common themes of criticism for students are going to fall around attendance and tardiness. Mm-hmm. And digital issues, phone generally, as the main things. And the one that follows next has always been intriguing to me. And that is students not injecting their opinions, not putting out information that the employer is really interested. Always remember that you're being hired for your contribution, and that contribution is spread out not only on your skills, but on your perceptions and on your ideas. So it really, every semester I will read, I wish they spoke up more. I wish they shared their ideas more. Finding a place where you're comfortable expressing ideas that you have and contributing them and recognizing them as valued, which has to be done in a way that's not like, you should do this, but really, oh, I was thinking, would this ever work? As a way for people to be able to sort of digest your concepts, but really making sure you're present, because there's a reason you're being hired, and it isn't just to fill a chair. It's really based on decisions to hire someone that is beginning out in their career or just leaving education or in the midst of education in order to bring in what that person can bring to the table.
Yeah, and keeping that in mind, I know we spoke a little bit about how the co-op is like a semester-long interview, but it's also a chance for you as a student to figure out whether that company or that culture is a good fit for you. And it's important, you know, even if it's not like something that you're extremely passionate about or an industry that, you know, you thought would be your first choice, to keep an open mind and to get a feel for that type of, you know, company or that type of culture, so that you can use that experience to make decisions down the road. You know, even if you don't want to be in, you know, IT, you know, there are skills you can gain there and connections you can make that can help you down the road.
I want to kind of circle back to that whole point of speaking up and making sure that you're kind of feeling out the culture a little bit and talking during meetings. That is actually one of the main contributing factors to why I lost that first job. In addition to not knowing how I was doing, I also wasn't comfortable speaking up in meetings. And they hired me to bring my ideas and my analytical ideas specifically. And I just wasn't confident enough. So let's circle back on that mentor idea. Mm-hmm. How I combated that in my next role was I did find a mentor, and I would bring my ideas to my mentor first and say, hey, I was thinking about this. Do you think I could bring that up in the meeting next week? And they would always help me workshop that idea. So your mentor can really help you get out of that imposter syndrome, which I think is a lot of what's happening when you're sitting in a meeting and you're afraid to speak up, or you don't think that your idea is valuable, or you think that everybody else in the room is thinking this. I just learned this in my group leadership class that I'm taking for my master's. It was a big lesson. I assumed that people were thinking the exact same things that I was thinking, and they were not. And we ended up, we messed up our mission in the little simulation we were doing. And a lot of it had to do with a couple of us in the room thinking, oh, everybody's thinking this, so I don't need to speak up. Mm-hmm. So not everybody is thinking what you're thinking.
I also think it's important if you find yourself, and co-op is a period that I've read a couple times in the 5 years I've been here, reviews of a student who brought an attitude onto a team that was beyond the positive and really altered the team. I remember reading about an interior design student a couple years ago that was able to take on tasks in a way that started to alter how the other employees approached their jobs.
Wow.
By That's really amazing. Being enthusiastic, rolling up her sleeves, where there had been a slight culture of people feeling put upon and overworked, et cetera. And her enthusiasm made people come back to the projects at hand with a renewed energy. And sometimes you can really make a difference in an office and really change the culture in an office.
That's awesome.
But it's not your responsibility either.
Right.
Right. If it's dysfunctional.
Yes.
You go.
Okay. And that brings up another good point. If you do have any issues or concerns while you are on co-op, reach out to your co-op and career advisor. Let us know. We've created relationships with most of these employers, and we want to make sure that those are going well. And if they're not, if you feel comfortable, we'll definitely say something and try to make a change. We want all the experiences to be positive for students.
Yeah, communication is really the key to all of this. And I want to think about our graduating seniors just one more time here, because this point is really not relevant to our co-op students at all. But once you get into a job and you've been there for 3 to 6 months or whatever, it's important for you to remember that your time off is not baked into your schedule anymore. You don't get summers off. You don't get spring break. You don't get Christmas off. You don't get all those, or Hanukkah. A lot of employers do give you some time off around Thanksgiving. A lot of times you'll get that Friday off. But once you are established, remember, and this is something I struggle with, which is why I'm talking to you about it right now, remember to take time for yourself and actually take those vacations, and don't be reading your emails. And unless that's something that energizes you and keeping up with your work is something that helps you stay sane, that's a different story. But I just want to remind you that once you are settled, that you should take time for yourself, because they're not going to give it to you.
Yeah, it's important to remember about the work-life balance, because I know employers often say, oh yeah, we have great work-life balance, but it is on you to kind of schedule days off or time away, and to, when you leave work, to try to leave work at work as much as you can.
And be cognizant, though, of your busy times. You know, there are going to be work ebbs and flows wherever you are, and so you don't want to take a vacation in the middle of your busiest week, but if you do need time off, you need time off. And so just stay aware of what you need for yourself, I think.
Yeah, and that's actually a good thing to check on during your first week or so. Typically in a full-time job, you'll meet with someone from HR or get some kind of onboarding about benefits, and that's a good time to ask about vacation, sick, and get a feel for how that does work and how you request it and everything like that.
Awesome.
Great. Yeah. Do we have any last tips for people going on the co-op or starting full-time jobs? Think of.
I think it's always important as you're moving through something to, on a day-to-day basis, sort of analyze how the day went. Sit back and, you know, it sort of ties into the concept of blessings, but really look at what you feel good about that you did that day and how you might do more of that. And keep a pulse on it. I think it's very easy to sort of get into a timed grind through a day, through a week, through a month, through a year, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm not happy, but I have no idea why. Really being aware of what is exciting to you in your career and how you might do more of it or advance it is a daily activity. It's not something that, you know, you want to reflect on a year and a half in or 5 years in to say this is not the right path. And then figure out, it's much easier to do micro redirection rather than macro redirection. So in other words, if your job is headed in a direction and there are small changes that might be taken to alter that direction, it's a lot easier to do it earlier in the process than further down the road.
Awesome. All right. So a couple of upcoming events do we have to share?
Yeah, so there's going to be this new series this summer, and you should be starting to see posters soon. It's called the Leopard Lunch and Learn Series. And it's geared toward toward seniors mostly, but pretty much anyone can attend. It's Wednesdays at 11 in the first floor of the CEIS building. And actually tomorrow will be intro to salsa dancing, which might be which is kind of interesting. But the rest of the series focuses on talks about managing money, physical fitness after college, salary negotiation, and things like that to help you kind of make the leap from college life to the real world, as it were. So check that out. Stay posted for posters about that.
I'm going to plug something else related to transitioning from life in college to life in the quote-unquote real world. We also have something called the Thrive Guide here at Wentworth, and you can go onto the library's website or just Google Thrive Guide Wentworth Witt Library, and you'll find it. It's on a LibGuide, which you're probably familiar with from your coursework. A lot of your professors will put together LibGuides for additional reading materials. So if you're looking to augment that series and you're looking to kind of really figure out how to budget and how to take on life after Wentworth, go to this series and then also take a look at the Thrive Guide. From our perspective here at Co-ops and Careers, we don't have any events coming up that we know of, but stay tuned. We might plan something for this summer. But we always have drop-in hours, while the semester is in session. And this semester it is Wednesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 4. So check with your own co-op and career advisor to see when they're going to be on drop-ins, but know that you can come in anytime on Wednesdays and Thursdays that afternoon. Am I missing anything else?
Oh, I don't know. There's a co-op deadline this Thursday at the 16th. So if you haven't reported a hire,
go report it right now.
Go report it right now.
Report it on WITWORKS. Register
there. Go for it.
And if you have questions, make sure you reach out to your co-op and career advisor. Our main office line is 617-989-4101. You can email us at coopsandcareers@wit.edu. Or if you'd like, you can catch us on social media, pretty much at WIT Co-ops Careers on Twitter and Instagram. Is where you'll find us. Anything else, guys?
That's it. Just hi to Kathy.
Kathy is my mother-in-law. Hi, Kathy. All right. Have a great week, everyone. Welcome back to the summer semester. We're looking forward to a great summer with everyone here.
Yay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.